Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Slash Filmcast. My name is David Chen, and no sudden move, more like no sudden retirement for Steven Soderbergh, that is.
Wow.
Joining me today is Devinder Hardwar.
Look forward to my gangster script about the rise of the Pentium processor.
And Jeff Cannata.
Just to be safe, I'm not going to move at all.
Welcome to the show, everyone. You can find more episodes of the podcast at slashfilmcast.com. Email us at slashfilmcast@gmail.com. That witty banter you just heard is a reference to our main review happening later on this episode. A review of No Sudden Move, the newest film by Steven Soderbergh with an all-star cast. It's just debuted in theaters and also on HBO Max this past week. And for The After Dark, which is available exclusively to patrons over at patreon.com/filmpodcast. We are reviewing The Limey today. I had pitched this, and the reason why I suggested we should review Steven Soderbergh's 1999 film, The Limey, is because
it's perfect. Yeah.
Well, I remember there being rapturous reviews about this when it came out, and I didn't, quote unquote, get it. You know, I was like, this is not bad, but
that was teenage David Chen.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
Early
David
days.
Chen has matured so much since then. So I was like, let's revisit it, you know, because sometimes I come back like Out of Sight. I remember watching that movie and being like, what's the big deal with this? Now it's like one of my favorite movies, right?
Sure.
And so I was like, is the same thing going to happen when I rewatch The Limey this week? That's available, again, exclusively to patrons who sign up for our After Dark tier at patreon.com/filmpodcast.
So, and watch the iTunes version of that movie, because
they
that
just
is
did a 4K
restoration.
They just did
beautiful.
A 4K remaster, is my understanding, and before that, we got some what we've been watching, some weekly plugs for you. But before any of that, we got to talk real briefly about somebody who passed away in the world of film this week. A titan of the industry.
Goat.
Somebody who's made movies that so many of us love, that were so important.
We owe everything
to
him.
Or many of our childhoods. Richard Donner passed away this week. Tell me more about that, Devinder Hardwar. You said you owe everything to him. Tell me more about that. What do you mean by
that? We as a culture owe everything to Richard Donner. Like, this guy,
I don't understand why people don't put him with Lucas and Spielberg.
Yes.
Like, he should be the third name that is mentioned, you know?
Absolutely. And maybe it was because he had a bad run in the 90s, you know, in the 2000s. Like, he didn't end
Lucas.
As big. Yeah, exactly. But he didn't end as big. But this guy gave us The Omen and Superman. And Superman was such a formative movie for me growing up. I enjoyed watching that at home with my parents, but they also told me stories of them watching it in theaters, you know, when that movie first came out. And that movie for me gave us a glimpse at like superhero movies that feel textured and layered and as deep as like, you know, a Shakespearean drama or something, but they're still funny and romantic. And man, we did not really see much of that in the 90s, huh? It seems like we just kind of forgot the lessons of Superman.
Arguably set the template, right, for a lot of the MCU, I would argue.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's so much that, like, an Iron Man draws from Superman in terms of
100%,
the tone and just, like, the structure. This guy helped in many ways to create the modern superhero industrial complex and helped to make kind of the type of movie that we know and love today.
But also The Omen. Like, he worked across genres. Scrooged, a movie I grew up loving. Lethal Weapon.
Goonies. Yeah. Come on.
Goonies.
I mean, you know, and even his, like, his B-sides, his, like, lesser, but there's the marquee things. Lethal Weapon, you know, Superman, Scrooge. Like, these big, like, massive cultural footprint movies. But then, like, Maverick is amazing.
It's a fun movie.
It's yeah, a great
it's a
movie.
Lot of fun. Yeah.
Lady Hawk.
Radio you know, Flyer. I Radio love Radio Flyer. Flyer. Yeah.
Dude, there's like his B-sides are mm-hmm. better than most people's A material. You know, even The Toy is a super subversive, weird, oh, yeah. dark movie.
I watched that movie a lot growing up. Yeah. That movie is weird.
It was just on TV all the time, right? It was just like mm-hmm. constantly on TV.
I'm going to say Assassins has given culture one of my favorite gifts of all time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is Antonio Banderas like typing on a computer, leaning back and just putting
just
his hand
it.
On his
just
mouth and being
it
super
so
happy
much.
With himself.
So great. You know? Yeah. Written by the Wachowskis. You know?
Yeah. Even his B-sides have given so much to culture, right? And I agree with you. Like it's you cannot understate how much he contributed. So
yeah.
Jeff, do you have a favorite of all that stuff we just said?
I mean, it's hard to pick anything other than Superman the movie.
Yeah.
For me, when I was a kid, Superman 2 was the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
It wasn't until I was older that I appreciated the first one more. But when you're a kid, like superpowers versus superpowers is what you want, right? You want, you know, the first movie is Lex Luthor is just kind of this, you know, bumbling goofball who goes up against Superman. It's not as exciting as Zod and the, you know, yeah. actual superpower battle in the middle of the city at the end of that film.
Played by
Terrence
Stamp, by the way,
yes.
who is the star of The Limey, the movie we're reviewing in the After Dark today. So
I will always kneel before him. But also learning about the Donner Cut and everything too, right? Of Superman, that whole thing is like, man, this guy just knew what to do.
Yeah. But like you, Devendra, I basically watched Scrooged every year my entire childhood around Christmas time.
That movie is not appropriate for kids.
No,
but,
not at all.
Yeah, I also watched
Have you
it
tried
every year.
Stapling them to the mice? You know, It's great. And Goonies, you know, Goonies is...
I wasn't a Goonies kid, but
oh, really?
I appreciate people who love Goonies. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was a big deal for me. And but yeah, I mean, it's hard to pick a bad one, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, he kind of fizzled out in the late 90s, early 2000s. But I mean, it's just like massive movie after massive movie, like really important, well-made mm-hmm. fantastic film after another.
I seem to recall, Dave, you being really excited about Timeline.
I don't think that's correct. I really loved the Michael Crichton
the book
on which it was based. I don't remember being psyched about the movie. I heard it wasn't that great, but I mean, I'm a fan of some of his late work, like Conspiracy Theory, the Mel Gibson, Julia Roberts movie, and again, Assassins. Mm-hmm. The guy was, you know, some people don't like his later work, but I thought there was a lot of craft still in a lot of that work. So
absolutely. Didn't he created Tales from the Crypt, right? So it's like there's a lot of that.
I don't recall that. He directed multiple episodes.
Yeah.
I don't know if he created.
I feel like I brought up Maverick and you guys scoffed, but that movie's awesome.
No, it's fun. It's fun.
And it was doing what we're doing now with these sort of... what are they called? What have we been calling them? Sequel reboots. What's the portmanteau that we were calling them?
Lega sequels.
Yeah, Lega sequels.
That is a term coined by Matt Singer over at screencrush.com.
Yeah. Lega I mean, sequels. Maverick is like the original Lega sequel, right? I don't know of one that existed before that, where it took this old TV show, kept all the characters, added a new generation, and like brilliantly, I think. Mm-hmm. I that movie's awesome. I love that movie.
Yeah. So we've really lost a great one. Richard Donner, man. Rest in peace. And thanks
Thank
for,
you
everything
for everything. Yeah.
Did. Yeah. It's truly
91
amazing.
Is a good long life, you know?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, folks. Let's move on to what we've been watching this week. There is a lot we have been watching this week. I will start by talking about a new movie that's out right now called Zola. Have you guys heard of the movie Zola? Devendra, I know this is on your radar.
Absolutely, right? Yeah. The movie based on the viral Twitter thread, yeah.
Yeah, so this Twitter thread went viral several years ago, and the author of the Twitter thread got hundreds of thousands of followers, and, you know, 5 years later, now there's a movie that's been made from the Twitter thread. I'm going to read the plot summary from the internet. Zola, a Detroit waitress, is seduced into a weekend of stripping in Florida for some quick cash, but the trip becomes a sleepless odyssey involving a nefarious friend, her pimp, and her idiot boyfriend.
That sounds like it's longer than 140 characters.
I think it
well,
was
it's
like
multiple 140 characters.
It was like a 140 48 tweet thread, if I recall,
it was
or something.
Novel
it was thread. Over 100 tweets, basically, was the thread. And at the time, people were like, this is incredible storytelling, this thread. And so they're like, let's make a movie out of it. And I got to say, I think the results are a little bit mixed. Here's what's great about this film. First of all, the main stars of this film, Taylor Page and Riley Keough, are amazing. They are superstars, and I look forward to them being in more things in the future, and I think they're just extremely talented. Nicholas Braun, who plays Cousin Greg in Succession, is also here. He adds
love
a lot
Greg.
Of...
love me a Cousin Greg.
Yeah, he also he adds a lot of like comic relief to the film. And okay. Coleman Domingo is in this film, and he is playing a rather ominous, threatening presence in this movie, but he does a great job as well. So I love the cast. The look of the movie is really interesting. It looks like an A24 film. Does that make any sense to say that? You know what I mean? Like when you've seen enough A24 films, like this almost like an aesthetic that they start to share. What I mean by that is looks like it was shot on film, like extremely saturated scenes, like very moody lighting. That's how I describe a lot of A24 films. And I think what this movie does is shine a light on the scourge of sex trafficking in America and how easy it can be for people to be caught up in this unwillingly and how rapidly just like hanging out with a friend, someone you think is a friend, can escalate into a terrible situation. So I think that like that is what is great about the movie. And I think anything that brings attention to this in a way that's grounded and interesting is worthy of praise. What I'm not as big of a fan of is, first of all, the movie's only like 85 minutes. And even at that length, it feels like it's kind of padded itself out a little bit. Like it just feels like, it's
it feels like it was based on, a tweet,
a Twitter thread. please, let's not be inaccurate in your derision. You know, I think that the original Twitter thread, if you go back and read it, it's available online. It's an amazing thread. Like you read that thread, you understand why someone would think to make a movie out of it, because it's so creative with its use of language. It's like maximizing what is artistically possible with the form of Twitter storytelling.
For
right?
sure. Yeah.
And the movie just, first of all, it's a completely different medium, right? But it doesn't necessarily capture that electricity that you get when you read a thread like that. And so I think that is a little bit unfortunate. This does not feel like a, extremely rapidly escalating, the guys who made Uncut Gems,
Yeah.
Safdies.
And, the Safdie brothers. This doesn't feel like a Safdie brothers movie in terms of its pacing, right? You watch Good Time or Uncut Gems, you're like, wow, this thing is out of control, and I don't even know what's happening, and anything could happen at any time. And you definitely feel like anything could happen at any time in this movie, but it is very, very deliberately paced. And so I think ultimately that it's an interesting experiment. I don't think it's a bad movie, but I don't know that it captures the full potential of that thread in terms of its pacing, in terms of the storytelling, in terms of the themes. But there's some good things about it. So a little bit of a mixed bag, but I do think it's worth mentioning because there's very few things out there, very few movies out there based on a viral Twitter thread, right? And so just like the fact that they've made one is worthy of pointing out in of itself. So those are my thoughts.
So what you're saying is at the end of the day, it's amazing that someone made a movie.
A Twitter thread became a
movie.
So true. It's so true. And you know, now that you point that out, I haven't been saying that at the end of our review.
You missed it last week, and I almost pointed it out, but then I thought, no, he's just going to be mad at me.
No, you got to point it out. You got to point it out, Jeff. Call me on that stuff, okay?
Yeah.
But yes, that is correct. I try to end every slightly negative, or actually, no, any review of any movie by saying that at the end of the day, it's pretty impressive that Janiska Bravo, in this case, the director of this film, made a film, because it's really hard to make a film. And anytime someone tries it, it's worthy of praise. Okay. The other thing I want to mention that I watched recently is this 1995 film called To Die For. This is starring Nicole Kidman directed by Gus Van Sant. Have you guys seen this movie?
Oh, yeah.
I don't recall seeing it, but in the 90s, I saw it. Yeah.
I have not had a chance to watch it until recently. I'd always heard it was great. Never had a chance to see it.
Didn't she get nominated for this?
Yeah, she was not. Nicole Kidman was nominated for a BAFTA.
Oh, did she not an Oscar?
She won a Golden Globe and a Best Actress Award at the first Empire Awards. I don't think she won an Oscar for this.
No, I know she didn't win, but I thought she was nominated for Best Actress, but maybe I'm wrong. Anyway, it was a big deal at the time. It was a big movie.
So Nicole Kidman plays a woman named Suzanne Stone who is obsessed with being on television.
Yeah.
And she kind of marries this small town guy and then finds that that life is not for her and takes some extreme steps to remove herself from that situation. And you find out, like, literally, I think in the opening 5 minutes, like, what happens is that her husband, played by Matt Dillon, has been killed. And the rest of the movie kind of unravels what happened there. And I watched this movie again because I had heard it was great, never had a chance to see it, and I saw it was available on Hulu. And so I thought, let's check it out. And I was pretty impressed by the movie. I think there's two things that are worth pointing out about the movie that are pretty great. Number one is Nicole Kidman's performance is excellent. She plays according to the Wikipedia page for this movie, her character has been described as suffering from narcissistic personality disorder. And I think
remember 1995 when we just, that just felt like the strangest thing. Ooh, so it's such a unique character choice.
Yeah, when someone like that wasn't the president for example.
Yeah.
I think that she is so good in this film. She actually reminded me of like Tracy Flick in Alexander Payne's Election a little bit, except much more deadly, much more willing to kill people.
Wonder if she had anyone to base that on. Oh, I don't know that she might have been married to. You know,
I can't say. Wow, you're really going there.
Yeah,
you're really going.
I don't know.
But she is just so good. Like she's chilling the way she plays that role, right? And the thing that is amazing about this movie, looking back at it, is there is a saying of like, never let them catch you stealing something small, you know? And it just is like her dream is not to be a big movie star, but to be like on TV, like a weather person or something like that. Right. And she's willing to like go to great lengths for it. And I really do think it captures something about what it's like to be a person on the internet today. I think that
pre-internet basically too.
Yeah. Well, she just wants to be an influencer, guys.
This movie would be very difficult for this movie to exist today, obviously, because this woman would just be on Instagram and TikTok. You know what I mean? Like there'd be no gatekeepers preventing her from living out her dreams. But I think that like in recent past, we've seen influencers and online folks go to greater, like do more and more outrageous things, like Logan Paul going to like the suicide forest being one of the biggest examples of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the fighting, the USC stuff too. Like it's all,
And it's like, wow, what would compel Logan Paul? What would compel a nice young man to film and upload a video of a suicide, like a dead body in a suicide forest?
Yeah.
And the answer is that our online systems reward increasingly outrageous behavior. Like you are getting millions of dollars per year for doing increasingly outrageous and offensive things. And so the system is like telling you like, hey, the more offensive you go, the more you will be rewarded monetarily with fame, with fortune, with followers. Mm-hmm. And it drives people to do extremely unpleasant things.
Yeah, this sounds like a good pairing with Nightcrawler, honestly.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's exactly. That's a great comparison. But this is totally a film that, in my opinion, is still worth seeing just because Nicole Kidman is so good.
Also, you get a sense of what a powerhouse Gus Van Sant was at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like he's kind of receded. I mean, I don't know. He's older now, I guess. But he hasn't really had a big film in quite a while. You know, in the sort of mid to late 90s, he was kind of knocking him out of the park, you know, and this was a major film for him. I think he was kind of one of the guys that defined the 90s and really put his mark on cinema history. I think he was a big, big influence in that period.
Yeah. He did To Die For, Good Will Hunting, Psycho, the remake, and Finding Forrester, four movies in a row, each of which did pretty well, except for the Psycho remake.
Right.
But
the Psycho remake, like, what an audacious thing to do, you know?
Yes.
Like, it's an interesting big swing to take.
Yeah. And his whole reasoning for that.
I don't know anyone who prefers the remake to the original, but it's like, wow, like, the fact that you would do that, you know?
He did it because it was interesting.
It's an experiment that I don't think anybody thinks was a home run, but certainly was a really interesting thing to do in the mainstream. Like, that was a mainstream movie, you know?
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
Yeah. So anyway, the movie is To Die For, and it is available right now on Hulu. Those are a couple of things I've been watching this week, Zola and To Die For.
Hey, gotta jump in here and tell you about our sponsor, Babbel. This summer, are you traveling again? You can get the most out of your travels abroad by learning the language of your destination with Babbel, the number one selling language learning app. From ordering in restaurants or asking for directions, to gaining a deeper understanding of the culture, Babbel makes the whole process of learning a new language addictively fun and easy. With bite-sized lessons that you can actually use in the real world, Babbel is a can't-miss travel essential. I have been learning Spanish with Babbel, and I have been loving it. It's so simple. It's so easy to keep up with it. It's 15-minute lessons, which makes it the perfect way to learn a new language on the go. And unlike the infamous language classes you took in high school, Babbel designs their courses with practical, real-world conversations in mind. No longer going to the biblioteca. Things that you'll actually get to use in everyday life. And other language learning apps use AI for their lesson plans, but Babbel lessons were created by over 100 language experts. Their teaching method has been scientifically proven to be effective. With Babbel, you can choose from 14 different languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, and German. Plus, Babbel's speech recognition technology helps you to improve your pronunciation and accent. There's so many ways to learn with Babbel. In addition to lessons, you can access podcasts, games, videos, stories, and even live classes. Right now, when you purchase a 3-month Babbel subscription, you'll get an additional 3 months for free. That's 6 months for the price of 3. Just go to babbel.com and use promo code FILMCAST. That's BABBEL.com, code FILMCAST, for an extra 3 months for free.
Divine Your Hardware, hit us up with a couple things you're watching this week.
Yeah, I want to mention that I finished The Underground Railroad, Barry Jenkins' epic show that's on Prime Video. And just have to say, this show is a masterpiece. Everybody needs to watch this. It is, you know, I've talked about it before. It's about a young slave girl named Cora who escapes her plantation. She's on the run from basically a slave chaser or hunter played by Joel Edgerton. The story, like, this show covers a lot of things that we've probably seen in other slavery narratives, but it does it in almost like a magical realist way. It takes the concept of the Underground Railroad literally, as if there was an actual railroad, you know, connecting southern states that, you know, Black people could actually get on to find some sort of freedom. And the series is really interesting, too, because it covers every episode basically covers a different state. I think some episodes are like 2 or 3 per state. But it works like the chapters of the book as Cora gets out of Georgia and heads to South Carolina and Tennessee and elsewhere. It definitely feels like something adapted from a novel, but I think like Barry Jenkins doesn't really do a straight adaptation here, at least from everything I've read. This is a beautiful show. Like it's beautiful and painful and is exactly the show I feel like everybody should watch right now to kind of get a sense of where we are as a country and what we're dealing with. You know, right now we have people in this country who are basically waging war and teaching history to kids. And to me, that is frightening.
Waging war against teaching history to kids, right?
Yeah. Waging war against people who want to teach actual history, you know, things that happened. They've created a new acronym for it. They've made a new boogeyman. But it's a lot of people who seem afraid to confront the actual racist history of this country, how slavery was a big part of what built America, and how, yeah, we've never really reckoned with all of that. And I think the show, even though a lot of things in it aren't historically accurate, like that, like an actual railroad, there's an episode in South Carolina where there is a skyscraper, I think decades before the first skyscraper is built in the US. It feels true in a very, I don't know, in a very like narrative sense, right? It is true in the sense of like the experience people went through trying to escape slavery, the experience of people feeling hunted and, you know, trying to find a place to survive in a country that doesn't really want them. It is epic. It is heartbreaking. It took me basically, I think, 2 months to watch this show because every episode just feels so deep and so impactful. And you just kind of want to sit with it. I can't imagine binging the show, but however you watch it, I think you should watch it. It's fantastic. And yeah, it's more Barry Jenkins stuff, guys. It is 10 episodes of Barry Jenkins magic, and it is well worth watching. It is definitely hard to watch at times, but I think everybody needs to see it.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. It's The Underground Railroad, and it's a series streaming right now on Prime Video. Yeah, really, really glad you enjoyed it, and I hope people have a chance to check it out. I certainly plan to. Anything else you've been watching, Devendra?
A lot of things, actually. So I want to shout out Fear Street Part 1, 1994, the first of the Fear Street trilogy based on the R.L. Stine books, which I grew up reading. I was always more of a Goosebumps guy.
I was more of Goosebumps. I read literally dozens of Goosebumps.
I've read one or two Fear Streets, and they're fine.
And I always saw Fear Street, and I was like, ooh, that's the other R.L. Stine book.
Well, that's
and
when
I,
you grow I, up. When, yeah. when you're like preteen, then you could get to Fear Street, you know? I was never a huge fan of this series, but this movie is a complete blast. It's directed by Lee Janiak, who I believe they filmed this. They filmed all three films at the same time, sort of like basically doing a TV show, except all the films are set in different time periods. So this one's 1994. I believe the other ones are like the 70s or 60s and then the 1600s. So it kind of goes way back. It tells a single story, though, of a witch who has basically been plaguing this town called Shadyside. And this movie, this 1994 one, owes so much to Scream. It is kind of hilarious. And it is, I think it's a slasher movie, just like Scream, that is well aware of the genre and like of the conventions and everything. The actual opening scene directly feels like a Scream remake. I believe Marco Beltrami did the score for this. So even like this movie sounds like Scream in a great way. It doesn't feel like a ripoff. I think this is a ton of fun. Even if you're not a huge fan of slashers or horror movies, this is a movie about a circle of teenage friends. It's a group of friends who basically uncover this sort of like a witch curse. One of them basically gets cursed by a witch, and their mission is to help their friend. It's just a ton of fun. I like all the characters. It is a slasher movie that had me on my toes. Like, it surprised me several times, which is not something I expect from a Netflix slasher movie, you know? So I had a ton of fun with it. There are some crazy kills here that I've not seen before in a horror movie. It's creative. It's funny. It's stylish. I feel like the one legit criticism I could put against it is that it's one of those movies that just puts a lot of songs in front of you, right? It is needle drop after needle drop. And definitely looking at Twitter, I saw that annoyed some people. To me, it felt more like these songs were each giving us like an insight into specific characters, you know, kids and teenagers in the 90s. And even today, the songs describe you, you know? So I don't mind all the needle drops. I kind of wanted some of them to last longer, but it was still fun overall. I think it starts a little rough, but it gets much better like once things get into swing. And then by the end, I'm just like fully primed to see the next one. And that is coming this week, I believe. Like, they're just coming one after another. So it's a Fear Street summer on Netflix, and I think it's well worth watching.
All right, that's Fear Street Part 1, available right now on Netflix. What else have you been watching, Devendra?
A couple of other things real quick. Have you guys checked out any of the new I Think You Should Leave?
It came out today, right?
I'm excited.
I'm so excited. I was thinking of catching it before I like started, you know, recorded the episode tonight with you guys, but I didn't get a chance to do so. It is literally going to be one of the first things I watch we stop recording tonight.
I mean, it's 6 15-minute episodes, like very similar to the first season, so you'll get through it really quickly. I've seen most of it at this point, and it's still good. They are just like banger after banger of weird, absurdist catch in this. Some are stronger than others, I'd say. But there's some that have like a continued narrative throughout the entire season, which is a lot of fun. I think they're more aware that we're expecting things to get weird after seeing the first season. And after that first season basically became a meme factory, you know, like it was just a thing that appeared everywhere and everybody was quoting it. And I just felt I loved that reaction to that show because it was what, less than 90 minutes. Less than 90 minutes of sketches, but it left like that is cultural impact, you know, like something that we keep referencing. Everybody kind of knows what you're talking about. And even if you don't, if you see some of those clips like turned into GIFs or something, it's just funny. It's just funny online. So I'm loving the season so far. I feel like the thing I really want is to see like how their writer room works. You know, right. Like, how do you boil down some of these concepts? How do you hone it down to really short segments, because it is just so dense. You know, if you blink for 10 seconds, you kind of miss some key lines or some key setup for a scene. And I think like it's just such a joy to have something that feels like it's just so creatively charged. I'm really enjoying it, and I'm really looking forward to rewatching it because I'm sure I missed a ton here. So yeah, I think you should leave. Still good. If you like absurdist humor, please check it out.
Yeah, I think you should leave season two. And like the motivating idea behind all the sketches is basically awkward social situations, pretty much, right?
Sure,
like
sure.
That doesn't encompass every single one, but I think it's just it's about awkward social situations, and I think that's one of the reasons why it resonated so much.
For sure.
Yeah. So
but it's more like people talk about like awkward humor or like Curb Your Enthusiasm stuff, right? Like I love the way the show cranks it up to way past 11 to like 20, right? It becomes like pure absurdism in just like a really wild way. It's not just like the you know, being in an awkward situation. It is like levels beyond, you know, is going to like the next plane of existence beyond awkwardness. And I love that.
I'm so excited to see if season two can take the title back from Auntie Donna, because I feel like Auntie Donna, for my money, I know you guys disagreed, but for my money, took the crown from, you know, just barely, but it'll be interesting to see if season two can reclaim the crown.
Fun.
Yeah. Both excellent.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I think you should leave season two on Netflix. Devinder, anything else?
Two quick things I want to shout out for some chill watching. How about that? I think after the last couple of weeks and certainly the last year, I am definitely looking out for things that just have like a chill vibe, a movie I can put on and just kind of relax to. So I rewatched Jim Jarmusch's Patterson, and this movie is just, it is a delight. It is just so chill. It is about Adam Driver, who is sort of like, he is a city bus driver in Patterson, New Jersey. He's also named Patterson. He is kind of a poet on the side. So the movie is about him observing daily life, things in his house, a matchbox, things people say on the bus. Being a bus driver is kind of the perfect place to be observant and to like soak in the world. And the movie's about, you know, it's not really about anything, to be honest. Like it covers a week of his life. He drives the bus, he looks at things, and he crafts poems. And I love how the film like puts those poems together, and you see him kind of rework it in his mind. There's not like any major dramatic events in this movie. It's like, it's a guy who's driving a bus and he's trying to write poetry. And yeah, so things happen to his poetry eventually. But even then, like that minor incident is kind of poetic and interesting in its own right. I think it's a ton of fun. Definitely worth watching. It's you know, it's a Jarmusch film. So it is all about the vibe of it. It's all about soaking in this detail, but I love this movie. It is just so, so relaxing. It's also like, it's about so many things, you know. It's about being in like a creative relationship where you and your partner kind of do your own thing, but support each other creatively. You know, it's about trying to find the beauty in the world It is about so many things. And Adam Driver is perfect in this. I love the entire cast. Gulshifteh Farahani plays his wife or girlfriend. I forget who exactly she is. But it's just great. William Jackson Harper's in this for a couple scenes too, and I love seeing him in everything. So if you want to chill and vibe out for a while, watch Jim Jarmusch and definitely watch Patterson.
Patterson is streaming right now on Prime Video.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else, Devendra?
Shout out to The Secret World of Arrietty, which is a Ghibli movie that I don't think we really talk about much. This came out in 2010. It is written by Miyazaki, but directed by Hiromasa Yonebayashi. So it is an adaptation of the novel The Borrowers. It's about little people who are in houses and kind of steal things from humans and have their own like little, you know, little environments, little homes and everything. This movie also isn't about very much. It is about a sick boy who comes to a summer home to stay. He discovers the borrowers. He helps the borrowers, and the movie ends. But it's so chill. It is so beautiful. It's filled with hand-drawn animation, beautiful backgrounds. Another great chill movie just to vibe to. I watched this with my daughter, too, and she really enjoyed it because of the sense of scale of seeing miniature, you know, like 4-inch people trying to exist in a normal world, I think was really interesting to her. So I really enjoyed it. It's on streaming on HBO Max now, along with all the other Ghibli stuff.
Cool. That's The Secret World of Arrietty, and it's on HBO Max. Jeff Cannata, what have you been watching this week?
Well, since we're on the subject of chill things to watch, I thought I'd mention Star Wars Biomes.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to be ironic.
I mean,
the show notes right now.
I'm just reordering things.
How about a chill apocalypse?
You'll hear what Jeff mentions next, and you'll understand why I thought he was going to be ironic just now. Yeah.
Well, I thought we'd stay thematic. And have either of you guys watched this? Star Wars Biomes?
No.
It's on Disney Plus.
Yeah. What is this? Tell us what it is.
18 minutes long. It is. So, okay. So, you know how, like, in the last, I don't know, 5 to 7 years, maybe a little more, 5 to 10, the sort of advent of drone photography has given rise to a new style of documentary filmmaking, where you're getting these very grand, beautiful shots that are drone shots of nature, of the earth, but visions of them that we've never seen before, because it just wasn't possible before drone photography. It was these incredibly beautiful, soaring visions of kind of inaccessible parts of the world. And, you know, previously, of course, lots of documentaries would use helicopter shots, but now the drones can get into tighter spaces. And you just see, I've noticed that there was this, you know, demarcation line of like, oh, okay, now documentarians can use this to shoot the world. Well, Star Wars Biomes is what if that, but for Star Wars places. So the idea is that it is photographing fictional places that exist in the Star Wars universe, Hoth, Tatooine, Jakku, you know, all these places that exist in the Star Wars mythos, but shooting them as if it's a documentary footage, like this beautiful overhead drone footage of completely fictional places. So there'll be these swooping shots over this icy tundra, and then there'll be like tiny little tauntauns running below, far below, you know? And, you know, it is incredible.
They're really just milking this IP, aren't they?
Yes,
it's like they were browsing YouTube and they're like, oh, this GoPro footage is really interesting. You know, this drone footage is interesting. Let's do this with the shit we got already, folks. It costs us nothing.
I have no idea what the genesis of this idea it was, but bravo. Like, let's create basically a nature documentary for a fictional place. I think that is so cool. I mean, there's no story here. There's no, you know, Star Wars-iness other than these mythical fictional creatures that are populating these mythical fictional places. It's done completely, you know, completely straight in the sense that there's like no wink, wink, nudge, nudge. There's no like lightsaber battles or anything spectacular. It's just like, what if you could soar over these places that we've only seen in these movies? What would you see?
You know,
it's really the, I can't remember the name of the awesome salt planet in The Last Jedi, but
I remember what it tastes like. Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, that sequence in Star Wars Biomes.
Crate.
Yeah. Mm. Crate. It is, you know, these slashing red marks of the layer beneath the salt. It's gorgeous and super chill. I highly, highly recommend it. If you're just looking to zone out, my friend was like, I wish I could have it as a screensaver. It's like, yeah, it would be an amazing screensaver. It is that level of entertainment in the sense that you're just sort of, you know, serene, but in the same way that I love looking at nature documentaries. It's really good.
I think Disney has just gotten this stuff really down. I talked about the Zenimation series before, which is just like, it is just ambient animation from like Disney cartoons.
It's like a mashup themed around like waterfalls or whatever. It's like every Disney movie that used a waterfall, here it is.
And you get some sound effects, but no dialogue, you know, no story. Yeah. It is just very chill. Sounds like they've just like mastered this art. Love it.
I highly recommend it. It's like I said, 18 minutes well spent.
It reminds me of The Simpsons. Like, remember Alf in Pog form? is basically like, remember the biomes of Star Wars in drone footage form? It's like, let's just remix like different permutations.
Yeah.
But
it's really well done. It doesn't feel like just like a crass cash grab or anything. It's like somebody took a lot of time and effort to make this feel like there's a sense of verisimilitude to it. It feels like you're looking at a real place, you know?
Because they're probably just using the assets they have already, right? Like I can't assume they're like building new shit for this show.
Well, I would love to know what the mixture of is this all CG or is there a mixture of real Earth footage that's been repurposed or doctored in some way? I don't know. I'd love to know.
Yeah, I think that what's cool about it also is that like when you're watching a TV show or a movie or playing a video game, like so much work goes into creating those backgrounds, right? And
I think about this all the time, Dave. I think about this all the time. As I'm like speeding through a level, I'm like,
right,
that's years of somebody's life.
And and by the way, like the objective of the game or the movie is often to divert your attention away from that to something else.
Yeah.
Right. Like you're watching the main characters on screen. You're not looking closely at the background. If you're looking closely at the background, like the storytelling has failed in some way.
Right.
So people put all this work into it just to set the mood, just like ambient for you to like understand kind of in the background, like what's going on. Your brain is making the connection of what's happening. And now you have the opportunity to kind of celebrate those things, right?
Yeah, exactly. Linger a bit and look at how cool this design is. I think that's a great way to think about it.
Well, that's Star Wars Biomes. It's streaming right now on Disney Plus, and it is one of the things that Jeff Cannata has been watching this week.
Hey, I want to jump in here and tell you about our sponsor, HelloFresh. HelloFresh is fresh, pre-measured ingredients, mouth-watering seasonal recipes delivered right to your door. What does that mean? That means that tonight, ladies and gentlemen, tonight, I'm not exaggerating, before we started recording this podcast, my in-laws came over, my wife's father and stepmom, and I made dinner for them. We got the family-style HelloFresh box, which is four adult meals, and I cooked it. I cooked for my in-laws HelloFresh. Delicious. It was cherry balsamic pork chops with roasted green beans and couscous with thyme. It was like a delicious gourmet meal. I cooked it fast. It was like 30 minutes or less. It was on the table. I got to impress my in-laws. I got to be the chef that made the delicious meal. Both of them were like, this is really good. You're quite the cook. My stepmother-in-law said, you're going to have to come over and cook for us. And I was like, only if you have HelloFresh. HelloFresh has improved my life. It has made me impress my in-laws. It's made my life simpler. It means that I don't have to go to the grocery store nearly as often. I don't have to overspend at the grocery store. I have much more variety in what I eat and what I feed my family. Our menus, they have over 23 meals every week that I'm choosing from. Part of the joy of HelloFresh is looking at the app and picking out my meals ahead of time. It's so great. There's something for everybody. And these are all designed and tested by professional chefs and nutritional experts to ensure deliciousness and simplicity. And I'm saving money. It's 28% cheaper to use HelloFresh than shopping at your local grocery store, and 72% cheaper than a restaurant meal without sacrificing the quality. Like I said, my in-laws thought it was restaurant quality. It's flexible. It's easy. I've been using HelloFresh for years. I buy it every week. And now you can too. Go to HelloFresh.com/FilmCast14 and use the promo code FilmCast14 for up to 14 free meals plus free shipping. Again, that's HelloFresh.com/FilmCast14 and use that promo code FilmCast14 for up to 14 free meals plus free shipping. You're gonna love it.
Jeff.
I also checked out the big movie of the week, which I'm shocked we didn't even do review as a main review because everybody's talking about The Tomorrow War.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Is everybody talking about it, or is Amazon just like putting the ads everywhere?
Yeah. The night that movie came out, my entire Twitter feed was people watching that movie and like live tweeting their experience of watching it. Dave, I understand you also watched The Tomorrow War, all 2 hours and 27 minutes of it.
I did watch The Tomorrow War. That
movie's 2.5 hours long.
It's 2 hours and 15 minutes. Or
that's still way too long.
2:20, I think. But yes, it's a little bit over 2 hours. And full disclosure, I work at Amazon. I used to work at Prime Video. I don't work at Prime Video anymore. Yes, I will be very. I'll have a light touch in what I have to say about it. But Jeff, I'm so curious what you thought about The Tomorrow War.
Well, I'm going to shock you, Dave, and tell you I actually had a great time with this movie.
Wow.
I know. It does a lot of really dumb stuff. I'll be the first to admit. A lot of really dumb stuff. It's way too long. Way too long. But this is the kind of thing that you just don't really get anymore. You know, it's pulpy sci-fi, an original script, I think. It's not based on anything, I don't think, which super rare to get a big budget. Ambitious sci-fi epic that isn't based on an existing IP of any kind. And it's got really big ideas. Yes, some of them are clunky. Yes, anytime we deal with the characters or their life, it kind of doesn't work. But there's enough, and it's way too long. But there's enough there. Like the ideas of this movie are pretty rad. It is a full-on sci-fi mishmash of like, it's got time travel. It's got aliens. Yeah. It's got intergalactic war. It's got, it's just like you want it from sci-fi? We got it here. We got spaceships. Yes. Aliens. You got it. Absolutely. Dude, time travel. Step right up. You know, it's like it. And I will admit, it doesn't all work great, but man, I was digging it. The action sequences are fun. The evil aliens are awesome. The ending is freaking crescendos in a cool way. Like, I was into this movie, man. I was into this movie. I thought it was fun. It's totally the kind of movie I usually take a crap on because it's so boneheaded, you know.
We just reviewed Godzilla versus Kong. I feel like, yeah, Jeff.
I think I had more fun with this than Godzilla versus.
That's
Kong.
What it's sounding like, and I'm going to watch this movie. And
I did. Okay. You're not going to agree with me at all.
I know. I watched the trailer for this movie, and I think I came away with like 5 obvious plot holes. But yeah, I'm down for checking out whatever this thing is.
I mean, here's what I'm going to say about what I like best about the movie. Okay. Is I think there's aliens in this movie, and I think the creature design is actually really cool. Like,
yes,
the sequences with the aliens are genuinely frightening, and they're designed like aliens, and the sequences are designed really well overall.
I think, and the explanation of what they are is pretty cool too.
Yeah. So that's one thing I really, really appreciated about it. As you mentioned, Jeff, there's lots of cool ideas that are introduced in the movie as well. That I'm not going to get into what they are right now, but would agree with you that there's some cool ideas. But I do have one question, which is the beginning, the movie opens, and basically there's like a big football game. People from the future appear in the football field through a portal, right? Uh-huh. They show up.
As
it's
they
the
do.
World Cup. It's the World Cup.
World Cup. Okay. And yes, British football, you see.
Yeah.
And people from the future show up, right? And they say, hey, we're from the future, 30 years in the future. Like, we've time traveled back in time. Aliens are attacking us. Okay. Like, we are. And by the way, we're losing this war. This tomorrow war that's happening 30 years.
Please join us. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So if that was the setup to a book, a story, real life, like that actually happened in reality, what would be your solution to that? Like, what would be the thing that you would do in that scenario, right? Devendra, you have not seen the movie.
I've not.
So if people showed up 30 years in the future, they're like, hey, 30 years from now, we're going to be fighting a big war with aliens, and they're going to like be completely dominating us, and we're basically losing. What would your react like? What do you think would be a good set of actions to take as a result of that?
My first response would be: so you took the plot of Terminator, and you're just bringing people back with you to the future where they're all gonna die. Isn't the way timelines work is that you're supposed to fix the problems before they get?
That was what I was trying to illustrate. Is I don't
tell
know
us
that
everything
your first choice
so that we can stop it, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Everything. Yes.
Let's stop it here. Why are we going there to die when you're already losing?
Right. So
my main thing. Yeah.
Their solution in the movie is let's ship people from the present to the future to help us fight in this battle that we're losing.
Where
right?
they die. Yeah.
I think the movie has a pretty rad explanation for that, actually, Dave. No, you make a solid point, right? And I think like established sci-fi lore would lead you down the road. And I like the movie, the fact that the movie zigs instead of zagging. In that, so the people in the future are like, if they do that, we don't exist.
That's right? Your problem, people in the future. That's your problem.
If you change the timeline, we don't exist.
Okay.
It's only one lone maverick that thinks that we should do that. Everybody else is like, no, what we got to do, this is a resources problem. They're murdering. Dude, I think it's so cool. They're like, they're murdering all the people. What do we need more of?
More people than the murder.
Mm-hmm. We need more people.
People.
This movie figuratively and literally throws people at the problem. People are just meat. In this movie,
do the people in the present have a problem with this? Because literally, it is the first
they start rioting and they start. It's a complete disruption of human life.
Nice job, people of the future. You're really helping society here. Yeah,
I think it's a really smart.
Is there anybody from the future who's like, guys? It's really shitty of us to ask anybody to do this. We're ruining and destabilizing their timeline. We're gonna bring them back here to kill. Do they send them back traumatized from the future war? Of course they do. How dare you, future people? How dare you,
dude? You gotta watch this, Devendra. Everything you're framing as being stupid, maybe you'll think is stupid. I think a lot of people do think is stupid. I think is kind of clever.
Yeah, you're not telling me it's actually not stupid. You're just saying, yes, it exists. So, yeah.
The stupid stuff, there is stupid stuff in my opinion. The stupid stuff in my opinion is that our hero is a former military turned science teacher, and everyone he's ever come in contact with is the perfect person for what he needs in any given moment.
Yeah, it's all Forrest Gumping, the situation.
Very convenient for him at every, like, if we only could have a person who's an expert in this. Well, I happen to know that person. That to me is the goofiest, and like all the family drama stuff where, you know, he learns a lesson about fatherhood and stuff like that. All of that is a little clunky.
It also stars Chris Pratt, who I think I'm done. I'm done with Chris Pratt, action star, mainly because of the Jurassic Park movies, because they've been, first one killed him for me. And then he's had some others, which I was just like,
I find him charming. I thought there were enough moments in this movie that kept me on the edge of my seat. I thought were super cool. It's just a different take on these sci-fi things that we've seen so many times. Like it's, I think it's got some really good stuff going for it, man.
I mean, it's clearly from a good director. Disagree. It's from a guy who we first like Lego director. Batman. No, he's directed a bunch of stuff like Lego Batman. Well, maybe his first live action, right?
Yeah, right.
But yeah, he's did Lego Batman, Lego Batman 2. He's worked on like a lot of animation stuff, but I really enjoyed Lego Batman. He's been a big part of the Lego movie franchise. So yeah, this seems like something he'd be good at.
I did get this email from Mike from Missoula, Montana, who writes, "This week, I watched a new movie on a widely used streaming service in which one of the stars of Guardians of the Galaxy teams up with the director of a Batman movie for a large-scale blockbuster that involves the main character reconnecting with his daughter in the midst of an invasion of inhuman creatures. But enough about Army of the Dead, guys."
love it.
Yeah. Talk about the Tomorrow War. Boom Goes Dynamite. Thank you for that, Mike.
That is Missoula, a very, very skilled Boom Goes Dynamite.
Very good. Excellent work, Mike. Thanks for writing
it. Director of the Batman movie. That's
yes. That's the zigging instead of the zagging right there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks for writing into that to slashfilmcast@gmail.com, Mike. Appreciate that.
Dave, I know you don't want to really spell out your feelings, but you didn't care for the movie?
Well, I've already said what I liked about it, and I pointed out one area that you might want to think more about.
Yeah, Dave received a visit from Future Dave, and he was informed not to not to say
about the movie. Devendra, maybe you can check it out. Maybe we can make it a topic of an After Dark sometime.
I'll watch this eventually. It's been a busy week. Surprisingly, there's just so much fun stuff to watch. But then I saw everybody talking about Tomorrow War, so I'll watch it eventually.
I'm not going to die on this hill. This isn't my, you know, my favorite movie. This isn't my Chappie, you know, but it is. I did have fun with it. I was surprised at how much I liked it because I had low expectations.
I will also say this, which is that I think that the budget is on screen. You know, what I mean by that is like, it was an expensive movie. It looks like an expensive movie. Like, again, the creature design is great. Some of the set pieces are actually impressive and breathtaking. And so
there's a moment where the creatures do something we've never seen them do up to that point. And I gasped. I was like, oh, that is awesome. Like, it gave me a couple of moments like that. And so I got to give the movie credit.
Okay.
It awesome. Didn't like it didn't overtly insult my intelligence. I thought it was actually kind of clever with some dumb stuff. But it wasn't like Transformers stupid. You know, it was fun. Fun.
Agree completely about that. Like, it's definitely smarter than a movie like Transformers.
I mean, it's a cohesive narrative. So,
it's actually at least a somewhat cohesive narrative. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, that is The Tomorrow War. It's streaming right now on Prime Video. Jeff, anything else you've been watching?
Yes, I had a chance to binge watch. I couldn't turn it off. I watched all six episodes, hour-long episodes of the Comedy Store documentary that is also on Amazon Prime streaming right now. I don't think this is super new. I think it's a 2020 release. I didn't know of it before. Maybe this is, I watched it on Amazon Prime, but maybe it was one of the new channels that I picked up. I can't remember. The point is,
I'm pretty sure it's on Showtime, Jeff.
Yeah, I think because I bought with the dollar for 2 months thing, I got Showtime and AMC Plus. So
you made it under the wire, Jeff.
I did.
You called me out. You were like, this information is too late, Dave Chen. But you made it under
the
wire.
Well, it was too late for me to get the star or whatever it was that you were recommending on another channel that I didn't buy.
AMC Plus, perhaps?
No, I got AMC Plus. Oh, okay, I got AMC Plus and Showtime. Cool. There was like I think it was another Stars or something else that you guys were recommending something
so
on.
So Comedy Store is streaming on Showtime, which you got through Prime Video Channels.
Yes.
Which is on sale on Prime Day. So
thank you for clearing that up.
Awesome.
Streaming is so easy now. Yeah.
I know, right? If only somebody would bundle all these together. Mm. I'm a huge stand-up comedy nerd, as people who listen to the show are well aware. I love stand-up comedy. I love the science of stand-up comedy. I love dissecting it. I love hearing people. I listen to podcasts. I mean, there's infinite number of stand-up comedy podcasts, but there's really good ones like, I don't know, The Good Ones, which is a great comedy podcast. But I love the art of stand-up comedy. And the Comedy Store here in Los Angeles, where I'm still living for a little while longer, is this storied place with a long history, and this documentary series delves into that history of the Comedy Store. But I think this documentary series is just awesome. The way it's structured, it is not an A to B to C story in the sense that you start with the first episode and it chronologically goes through the history through the last episode. Each episode kind of chronicles the long history of the store, but focuses on different individual comedians, kind of chronicles their careers and how they intersected with the place, the tendrils of the Comedy Store, and how it has resulted in all these different people that have long comedy careers on television and in films. Really beautifully done. Tons of footage that seems special, you know, home videos of people, recordings of stand-up sets at the Comedy Store, really, you know, young versions of famous people, you know, Joe Rogan when he's in his 20s, and the list goes on and on. There's like old David Letterman. There's a whole episode sort of focused on David Letterman, and just tons and tons of great footage, snippets of old stand-up sets that you've never seen before that are hilarious, and great stories about this chaotic, crazy, drug-infused lifestyle that surrounded the place for many years in the 70s, and then, you know, sort of transitioned into the 80s into this different kind of feel where the place almost went under. It's a really wild roller coaster story, but I love the structure of the documentary where every episode feels like a complete arc, and then you start again, and it just kind of delves into different aspects of it and things were going on. I can't recommend it high enough. I really watched what I thought was going to be one episode and ended up spending multiple hours on the couch. Like, I don't want to stop watching this. It's great.
All right. Well, that's the Comedy Store documentary. Is it just called The Comedy Store, I think, right?
Yeah, it's called The Comedy Store.
It's just called The Comedy
Store. And it is a documentary.
Right. Yes. And I believe it's a 5-part documentary on Showtime. So,
yeah.
Check it out. That is what we have been watching this week. Let's do some quick weekly plugs. Welcome to Weekly Plugs, the part of the show each week where we plug something we have been in or something that somebody else has made that we think is awesome. This week, I had a chance to watch Black Widow and made a little non-spoilery video review of it on my YouTube channel. So
La-ti-da.
It can be a little amuse-bouche.
Seems like you're really proud of yourself about that, huh, Dave?
A little amuse-bouche for our full review of Black Widow, which will be forthcoming in the
weeks
to come.
Once again, sharing the wealth, really.
I mean, most definitely. You know, that's not really how it works, but yeah, I mean, anyway.
You know, as a group, what one can ask for, you know, screeners for all of us, because we're doing this as a podcast.
Yeah,
it's three of us.
Like teammates,
yep.
Colleagues,
co-hosts.
Friends, you might even say.
Anyway, yeah, check out that YouTube review, Black Widow, on my YouTube channel. Okay, Devinder Hardwar, what have you been, what's a plug you want to make this week?
I want to just shout out the latest episode of the Engadget podcast where we talked about a bunch of things, Samsung and little bits of Mobile World Congress that happened. But actually, we at the very last minute got to get our hands on the latest like operating system betas. So if you're at all interested in hearing about what iOS 15 feels like or macOS Sierra, which I've been running, or the latest version of Windows 11, check out that episode. It's me and my co-host, Sherlyn Lowe. We talk about all those things, and they're a ton of fun. It's an exciting season if you are into computer shit. How about that?
That right. Computer shit?
Yeah, love it.
Yeah.
Jeff Cannata, your weekly plug?
Hey, I do a science podcast that is infused with comedy. Some would even call it a comedy science podcast. Award-winning! We actually have won an award. Multiple awards, actually. For We Have Concerns, a comedy science podcast I do with Anthony Carboni. I don't talk about it a lot on this show, but I'm proud of it, and I think it's good. And you can learn something and laugh along the way. It's irreverent, it's silly, but we actually dig into some pretty cool science and sociology and psychology and, you know, esoteric topics, but fascinating. You can find it at wehaveconcerns.com.
All righty. Those are our weekly plugs this week. Let's get to our review of No Sudden Move.
You said a man wants to see me.
Alley out back.
Can't come in. What is he, white? horrible. So what's the score?
We're sending a man that works in an office to pick something up. You are part of a babysitting team watching his family while he does it.
Good morning.
Everything is normal, except...
What do you want?
Is that something you'd say? Normal Monday?
That was from the trailer for No Sudden Move, newest film by Steven Soderbergh, written by Ed Solomon. I'm going to read the plot summary from IMDb. A group of criminals are brought together under mysterious circumstances and have to work together to uncover what's really going on when a simple job goes sideways. All right, so that's the plot summary from IMDb. And right off the top, I'm just going to tell you guys that when we get to the spoiler section, the spoiler section will spoil the film Uncut Gems. So I'm not gonna explain how, but it will spoil Uncut Gems. So once we get the spoilers and you haven't seen Uncut Gems, you don't want to be spoiled, you tune out of that spoiler section. Okay.
I'm really wondering what this is going to lead to.
I'm going to spoil Uncut Gems. I'm going to give a pasta recipe. I've got six digits of a phone number that I used to have in high school.
Yep. All that stuff. Okay. Okay. So No Sudden Move. New Soderbergh movie. The cast is incredible. Like, just unbelievable star power in this movie. You got Benicio del Toro. You got Don Cheadle. You got Brendan Fraser. I'm not joking. Within a 30-minute span of time, last Friday night, I got two texts within a 30-minute span of time. One of them was from Jeff Cannata, who texted me. I'm trying to pull it up right now. But you text me in disbelief that Brendan Fraser was in the movie you were watching. Yeah. Right?
Well, yes, because he's in the first 5 minutes of the movie, and I was like, wait a minute, that can't be.
Here's the text. Me watching the first 5 minutes of No Sudden Move. Wait, is that Brendan Fraser? Literally minutes after I got that text, a completely separate group of friends texted me, this is awesome. This is confusing. Is that Brendan Fraser?
Listen, so, we all miss Brendan Fraser. There's been a hole in our pop culture with him, like, kind of AWOL for a while. That's why I was recommending Doom Patrol, because he's fantastic in it.
You got John Hamm, you got Julia Fox, Kieran Culkin, and Amy Simons, as well as Noah Jupe in this movie.
David Harbour.
Yeah, David Harbour. Just incredible cast. So with that star power, and with Soderbergh kind of going to a crime thriller, his crime thriller roots.
Yeah,
that
he's a
explored,
master, right? Yes. Yeah.
In movies like, I would say, like, Traffic is probably a good comparison to this movie. It also has some similarities, in my opinion, to his last movie, High Flying Bird.
There's a bit of Aaron Brockovich in here too. Like, there's stuff affecting people, and there's also crime.
Indeed. Yeah. Devinder Hardwar, what did you think of No Sudden Move?
You know, you'd think with this cast, written by Ed Solomon, who I typically enjoy.
Don't like where
this
is going.
Don't say uh-oh. You'd think this would be a complete, you know, knockout, right? This should be a perfect film. Soderbergh knows exactly what he's doing. This is his wheelhouse. And I think it's a good movie, but it didn't, like, to me, like, it lacks a certain energy. It was really telling going from watching The Limey, a movie I consider a masterpiece, to watching this, which is, it feels like it never quite gets going. You know, I think of, like, these great movies. I guess the way I recall movies, right, is just of the scenes I really want to rewatch again. And for The Limey, it's practically every single goddamn scene. You know, I just love that movie. And this one, I'm like, well, it kind of starts off almost feeling like a wannabe gangster movie at times, like just the way it's written, people repeating things back to themselves because that's what tough guy gangsters do. I think there's a situation like once things coalesce inside a house and there is a bit of a hostage situation, I think things get really interesting. But yeah, to me, this movie kind of coasts at a certain level and never, like, really jumps beyond that. I was probably expecting more given this cast, given, like, all the talent involved. Like, I don't feel like it's The direction isn't particularly inventive or anything here. Even the editing, which, you know, is Soderbergh's big thing. None of it just felt like, it felt like he was on autopilot a bit with this movie, but it's still enjoyable. I think it's a perfectly fine crime thriller. And once you figure out what this movie is actually about, I was like really into it. And then I was thinking, why are we talking about this now? Like, can we have been talking about this like throughout the movie? Can we like set up the narrative for why this is kind of a big deal, instead of like low rent gangster stuff at the beginning? I enjoyed it, but it is definitely not my favorite Soderbergh.
Jeff Cannata, your thoughts on No Sudden Move?
Well, Dave, I guess you could say my thoughts on No Sudden Move are best summed up in the form of a limerick. Though I'm perplexed by how it ends, the movie itself transcends in every capacity, and what audacity to shoot the whole thing with that lens.
Yeah,
nice.
Quite
also
a lens.
Nice rhyming audacity with capacity. That's very good.
It.
Good rhyme,
love it.
Jeff.
Thank you.
Nice, nicely done.
I basically disagree with everything Devendra said.
It's fine.
Full on one of my favorite movies of the year. One of my favorite Soderberghs. I thought this was enthralling. I was there from the word go. I love the twists and turns. There are awesome surprise double crosses and just like everything you want out of a juicy crime thriller. The way the movie delivers information and meets it out to you, I was just on the edge of my seat the whole time. I didn't know who to trust and who not to trust. I absolutely loved it. I thought the performances were awesome. I loved the script. I loved how we learn things about these people and all of their relationships with each other. Nothing is hand-holdy or spelled out for me. It's all like, I got to intuit what's going on. I got to use my brain and listen and figure out, my kind of movie for sure. And as I said in the limerick, crazy the way he shoots this. Like, he's got this incredible A-team of players, what I consider to be a top-notch script. And he's like, what if we just shoot it through this comical circus lens? What if we just shoot the whole movie?
That's what he's been doing for the past 5 years, right? Like, I'm just going to do this with an iPhone, okay?
One of
the worst cameras we've got around. I'm just going to do the whole movie on this, okay?
Yeah. It's wild. Like, the fact that he's that confident that this is going to work, and it does, when he's shooting it in a funhouse mirror. I mean, it's this crazy fisheye lens that he shoots, I would say, 90% of the movie with. And vignetting. He's like vignetting the image. It's wild. Where like if you to spell it out, if you have not seen the movie, a character can walk to the edge of frame and they will be distorted. Their frame will be stretched. It will look wild and weird and fisheyed. It's like, so he shoots most of the movie, and yet it somehow kind of works, and it makes it feel intimate and dangerous and cool. I was so into this movie. I've been recommending it to people all weekend. Really dug it.
My only response to that, Jeff, is her?
Wow. Okay.
No, it's fine.
Somewhere in between you guys.
Let me just say, by the way, like, Amy Simons is incredible in this movie.
Yes,
like, she is juggling so many things at once. So I wanted more of her, to be honest, among everything else that was going on. But yeah, go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, overall, I like this movie. I think you should check it out. I think, Devendra, you hinted that basically this is a stealth social justice movie. And I'm not going to explain the details of that until we get to spoilers, but like, you think you're watching one thing and then it really is kind of a bigger thing. And it's fascinating that like a lot of Soderbergh's movies have to do with social justice. You watch movies like Side Effects, which is about the pharmaceutical industry, or Contagion, which is about public
health.
And
Aaron Brockovich,
Traffic, arguably, even High Flying Bird, the movie that was shot using iPhones. Like, he's very concerned. When he's not just having fun with movies like Ocean's 11 or Logan Lucky, he seems to be very concerned with like making his work mean something. And I really admire that. I think this movie starts out real strong. Love the opening 30 minutes. It's super tense. And then everything after that, I feel like, is still good. You know, these actors are so good, they can make anything they do interesting. But it does get a little bit too twisty for its own good, in my opinion. Like, I'm paying pretty close attention and watching it with, you know, captions on. And, you know, Ed Solomon, I think, has talked about how, like, he wanted to make, or I don't remember who involved in the filmmaking. It might have been Ed Solomon, might have Steven Soderbergh. But, like, they wanted to make it so that, you know, people don't show up and say, well, if it isn't my brother who I've known since I was a kid,
yeah,
you know, like,
right.
They wanted to like make it so that you had to work to like understand what's happening.
Totally.
And I should say, by the way, did you guys ever see Mosaic, that weird project that he was doing with Soderbergh?
No, never did.
That was the series. It was a series, right?
It was an iPad app. Right. It was like almost like choose your own adventure, and there were multiple storylines. So I love these guys and the fact that they love to experiment. You know, it just sometimes doesn't always work for everybody.
Yeah. But so I thought it got a little bit too twisty for its own good. And I thought some of the stuff towards the end was very, very clunky. But
I agree with that. Yeah. I put that in my limerick, as you heard.
But overall, I dug it. And also, it's very funny at times. Like there's a lot of, there's a handful of like really great one-liners that are just like, I'm going to remember them after I finish watching the movie. So, and after we finish talking about it. So yeah, overall I was a fan. Starts out great, kind of loses its momentum. And then the end is a little bit of a mess, and we'll get to that in a bit, but
I'm kind of right there with you, to be honest. Like, I think I'd flip it around. I think it starts off a little weak because it takes them a while to get to the house. So I think like that maybe the second half of the first act, and the second act I think that was kind of
Still first act though, and I thought the house was awesome. Like that stuff was all amazing. So anyway, those are some overall thoughts. Why don't we get the spoilers? Let's get the spoilers.
I just want to say David Harbour is amazing in this movie.
He's really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Don Cheadle is too. I mean, everybody's good.
All right, let's get the spoilers for No Sudden Move starting right now.
Now you're looking for the secret.
Can I see this coming?
No.
But you won't find it because, of course,
you're not going to see this coming.
You're not really looking.
I have been puzzling over how it works.
You don't really want to work it out.
Who's in the box?
I have been dying to tell you.
I want to tell you my secret.
You want to be fooled.
All right. Spoilers for No Sudden Move starting right now. So I got to say that this
Did
week
not see
I watched.
That coming. Yeah.
This week I watched a movie where Julia Fox hooks up with some guy who ends up getting shot in the head while she flees in a car with a bag full of his money.
Wow. Well done.
But enough about Uncut Gems.
It's really her thing, isn't it?
Let's finish talking about No Sudden Move. You guys like how I set that up?
It's pretty good.
I had to warn people about that spoiler before I set that up.
That was good.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. It was good.
It was planning. Yeah. Production value. That's called production value, baby.
Is that what that's called?
Yes.
I don't think that's what that's called.
No, that's what it's called, Jeff.
I don't think that means what
you
think.
Well, I would understand why you don't know. Anyway. No Sudden Move. So
my biggest problem with the end is like the guy just lets Don Cheadle go?
Yeah.
I didn't get that at all.
There's a lot of things that happened that I did not get.
Well, my understanding of the end was that they had planned that whole exchange together.
I did not get that.
That was my interpretation, was like they had planned, like, this stuff is going to happen. You're going to extricate me from the situation, you know, et cetera.
Right.
Yeah.
But why would they don't have, he doesn't have the money. Also,
well, he got $5,000. No, I guess he's free.
He got his half of it. He got his half of it.
Right.
So. I thought it was only $5,000. It wasn't even like a big amount. So.
So,
yeah,
a few things. First of all, love the opening sequence. Just these are just assorted notes. Love the opening sequence. Amy Simetz, the house sequence, right? It's so tense.
Unbelievable.
I was so good. Anything could happen. You have no idea what's going to happen. Amy Simetz delivering the line. I don't know, maybe because like they hate happiness. You know, like, I just thought that was incredible line.
People coming to the door during at the house and like how they handle that.
Yeah. So good.
All of that. And she's like, I bet that is not the end of it. Yep. Nope. That's not the end of it. It's all so good.
It's so good. Mm-hmm. The Kieran Culkin character just getting executed right off the bat, like super shocking death.
Awesome.
Not the first time that actor has been like randomly like played a character that's been abruptly killed while you're watching something. So like love that stuff. Then like I said, kind of a little bit kind of a little bit clunky in the middle, you know, like just as they're unraveling all the machinations of different people. And then the ending with Matt Damon showing up. What is up with directors and Matt Damon cameos in Act 3 of films? Right,
I think he's the guy's just available. You know, yeah. He's just like, yeah, I'll do 2 days on this movie.
Between I read that he was trying to get Clooney in for a big role, and they wouldn't say which one, so it was probably that. And Clooney wasn't available to shoot during COVID.
Mm.
Yeah,
but I was not a fan of Matt Damon just straight up saying the themes of the film.
they didn't do it at all until then, so I guess they kind of had to do it then. Yeah,
right. But it's kind of cool, right? Like, I think it's kind of cool that this movie is a movie about big auto cartels, right? Like, and how these people perpetrated this injustice on the American people, and no one ever got in trouble for it. And this movie, which is ostensibly a crime thriller, is how most American people are finding out about it.
Yep.
And that's just a cool idea. I just wish that when they got through to finishing the swing, it wasn't so clunky and on the nose. Jeff Cannata, what did you think of that ending speech with Matt Damon and all that stuff?
I thought it was cool because it comes out of nowhere and you're like, you're in a different movie now. And I like how he comes in basically takes over the movie.
Yep.
And in the sense, it feels like this inevitability, right? I'm bigger than all of this and I'm going to win. And he does win. And it is this, I think it contributes to this feeling of like, I'm the guy who's legal here. Everything I'm doing is legal, and yet I'm perpetrating the worst crimes,
And
I'm doing
all the
it
money
all on the up and up. And I'll stare you in the face and tell you you're going to lose, and you are going to lose because I have the power, I have the money. That's how it's going to be. And I just thought that really expressed that feeling of like, well, it's this late stage capitalism that is more potent than any of these crooks, you know, these guys with guns. You don't need a gun to perpetrate a massive theft or a great crime on the world. You don't need a gun. You just need a dude in an office, you know? And I thought that was cool.
Mm-hmm. On the flip side, I love that scene with John Hamm and Matt Damon at the end.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
That
yes.
was awesome.
He was just like, I'm not even gonna. You want me? You want some liquor? Like, he doesn't even need to be bought off.
$80 a liquor. Wow.
Yeah. He doesn't even. He's not even gonna think of taking the money. Like, he's so subservient.
Yes.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Like that, I thought is delightful and subtle, and it tells you everything you need to know that, like, Matt Damon trusts this guy completely. He's not even thinking about stealing money, even though he's like, you undercounted it. Matt Damon's like, oh yeah, I must have missed that. $30,000. Bill Duke, pretty awesome in this movie.
Always
just
awesome.
Showing up.
Always
being
good
a badass.
To see Bill Duke. I love Bill Duke. Right. Give me Bill Duke in one scene, right? We'll talk about that in the Limey. But
I was gonna say it was a cool through line with the two Soderbergh movies with Bill Duke.
Yeah. So it's cool that he's like, just showing up. Yeah, pretty cool.
Years that have passed.
Still a badass though. Arguably more of a badass now than he was back during the Limey.
Oh, for sure. So,
love all that stuff. And then the David Harbour storyline was interesting. This is, I think, the big crime of this movie, you know, so to speak, is that I'm so caught up in David Harbour's fate, and then he just vanishes for the second act of the film, right? Like, I'm so into, like, what he's doing and how is he going to balance having this affair with, like, being part of this crime drama and also having a family. Like, it's impossible. And then the movie's just like, we don't really care what he's doing. And that I thought was kind of a disappointment.
Yeah. A little frustrating. And then by the time, like, you get around to more of what he was doing with that secretary, I also wasn't clear exactly, like, he had a deal in mind or like he was going to do the thing before the boss did the thing.
What I gathered, and maybe I'm drawing the wrong conclusions, but what I gathered is he literally makes the proposition, which causes the crooks to be hired to steal the thing.
Correct. Right.
Because they're like, we're not going to deal with this putz. We'll just have our dudes come in and steal it.
And then the thieves' solution to stealing it is to force David Harbour to get the document.
Exactly.
So he should have just done it himself in the first place.
Exactly.
Wouldn't have people holding up his family, you know, and so on.
Dude, that scene where he's like, I'm going to punch you now. This is me punching you.
So good.
I'm going to punch you. It's so awesome. So awesome.
I would never wish bodily harm on any other human being ever, but it made me think of, you know, what an average person working in a job might feel about, like, wanting to hurt their boss if they're very frustrated with them. Me, David Chen, personally a huge fan of my boss, but I can imagine someone out in the world who's not being frustrated, and they would want to exact some bodily toll, but would also feel bad about it.
But I don't even think it's that. I think it's the opposite of that. Like, he's like, I love my job, and that should show you how important this is to me right now, that I know I'm going to get fired. But this is like, it's such a great scene, because you're like, I'm forced to do this, which should show you, based on how much I do not want to do this, like, how bad of a situation I am in right now.
Yeah.
It's such a great logical through line. It's great.
I also loved that scene when Benicio del Toro throws a blanket on that woman he's taking hostage.
I know.
And, like, takes off the mask. He's like, who among us hasn't been there? Like,
yeah, especially in COVID.
Yeah,
you know,
we just want to take the mask off. And so you just like, let's just throw a blanket on this person, you know?
Yeah. Like, I'm not really able to deal with you right now.
Yeah.
He throws the blanket over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But ultimately, like, it's a story about America and the injustices that the wealthy and the powerful have perpetrated upon among, like, minorities and also the poor. And, you know, how successful do you think it was at doing that, right? Like, Devendra, you're saying you feel like the message kind of came in a little bit last minute, and I kind of agree, you know? Mm-hmm. The whole movie, it's like a stealth setup. You don't know that it's going to be about that until really
they're
the
saying,
end.
I've read some interviews and they're like, guys, we got cars throughout this movie. There are scenes that take place in cars. You get it? Cars.
But I think, I don't know, like...
Yeah.
I feel like there's a happy medium, right? Because I think there's some movies, again, like some of his other movies, like Contagion and Side Effects.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you know... that Side Effects is about the pharmaceutical industry. You know that Contagion is about public health and how we handle pandemic, like, pretty early on in those movies, and they still manage to tell really interesting stories, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this movie, you don't really know what it's quote-unquote about.
It is completely separate.
Right, until the last third. And so I feel like I don't need the movie to, like, spell out the themes in graphic detail, but I feel like there's some happy medium between, you know, we're not introducing this until the last third, really, in any earnest way, versus, you know, it's it's super obvious and clunky and kind of, you know.
Well, I don't disagree with you entirely. I think there is a version of the movie where we kind of are aware of what it's about, and it infuses everything we're seeing. So I'm not completely in disagreement. But I did like the fact that it's a twist in and of itself, that this is like this, we're in this gangster movie. We're in this movie about the underworld, about these seedy characters who've all have these dark pasts. And yet the thing that trumps all of it
is industry.
Unexpectedly is straight up American corporate business. Like, that is just what is going to put all of them in their place. It's just power and ubiquity of American corporate interests.
Mm-hmm. I just think it could have been seeded better, which is probably why the Matt Damon scene is so big, right? And so forceful, because they were like, oh, shit, we got a lot of catching up
out.
To do.
Yeah. They're like, we got to just put everything out there in this.
Watching this movie made me think of Killing Them Softly, a movie I didn't really like too much at the time, but honestly, just thinking back on it and thinking back of the last decade, that movie, you know, spoke a lot of truths. And I think did it in the guise, you know, that movie was also about America being a big business, basically, and, you know, the way capitalism kind of destroys us all. But it was also essentially, you know, a mob, a gang movie, a gangster movie, too. But I think ideas were seeded throughout that thing. in right. ways that were interesting and, you know, just not as blunt as this. And there is a big speech at the end of that movie, but it hits with an impact, which I don't think the Matt Damon one did for me.
Well, first of all, I loved Killing Them Softly. Yeah, and I've always loved it, right? Like, I was a huge fan. It bombed completely in box offices. Yep. Like, it made very little money. And I remember you complaining about how clunky it was, Devendra, because...
It did feel clunky, yeah.
Because there was, like, Barack Obama speeches going on throughout the whole movie, right? Or, like, it was Barack Obama or George W. Bush. Is like, one of those guys, like... or it was, like, the transition between the two, if I recall correctly. And it was, like... they're playing these speeches in order to juxtapose and contrast the vision of America that Barack Obama is projecting with the seedy reality that we all live in. And yeah, it is a little bit clunky. That said,
better than this. Yeah.
Well, to me at least, it might have swung too far in that direction. Right. But ultimately it got more right than it got wrong. That movie is awesome. Like, people should watch Killing Them Softly. It's so good. And I do think that it is a little heavy-handed. You know, I was talking about how, like, you got to have a happy medium, right? This one maybe doesn't do it enough. Killing Them Softly, maybe it's a, you know, Goldilocks. It's like this one not enough. Maybe that one a little too much, right? And then some other movies, you know, right down the middle, like Side Effects or Contagion. It's like it works with or without the themes, right? And I think Killing Them Softly, very heavy-handed, but that mob storyline hits great. Also opens with an extremely tense holdup scene, by the way.
It does.
So a lot of similarities between the two films. But if you haven't, check out Killing Them Softly yet. I do think that movie is like a little bit of a better film in terms of landing its point than this one is. But they're both great films. Killing Them Softly and No Sudden Move, I think, are both totally worth watching. All right, folks. Any closing thoughts on No Sudden Move as we wrap up here?
Just trying to think here. I mean, it is honestly kind of shitty. Like the actual situation they set up here and end the movie on it. I guess you're thinking about, I guess these industries really don't have our best interests at heart, huh? It's just like a thing that keeps coming back to me when I look at our, you know, impending climate apocalypse. The sea is on fire. Buildings are crumbling. Everything's
falling
apart.
And it's not new. Yeah. It's not something that just started in the last few years. Like the 50s, they're like, fuck everybody. Mm-hmm. You know,
I so desperately want to talk about the Tomorrow War's perspective on climate change, by the way. But that'll have to wait for
I thought that was so clever the way it that'll have to wait for another day. I thought that was cool.
I know. I agree with you that the ending is a little chilling in terms of how white collar crime is simply not punished in the same way as other crimes.
Or at all.
And it reinforces the idea that there's two Americas, there's two justice systems, and how effectively it does that, how effectively it lends a message is completely up to you. You know, I actually think it's mixed in terms of effectiveness for all the reasons I've discussed. But Jeff, like you're the biggest fan of this movie. Like, what did the ending say to you, like personally?
Everything we've been saying, I think it worked for me. I mean, I thought it landed pretty hard. I like movies where I'm constantly asking the question throughout, and the movie is interesting enough that I still want to know the answer at the end if it hasn't told me yet.
The question in this case being what exactly
are they after?
You
know, I think that the movie isn't necessarily always about that, but that question looms throughout the entire film. It's like, what is this? And there's a really cool moments in the, you know, where they're like, what's this? Is this a carburetor? Is that what it is? It's like a muffler system? Is that what we're... It's so interesting how the characters are in the dark, the audience is in the dark, and then the movie sort of lands, this other foot comes down at the end, and you go, oh man, all of these people, that you know, so much of the movie is setting up these big players, you know, there's these names of these big mobsters, like the whole beginning is like, did so-and-so, is this a so-and-so job? No, I'd never work for that person. You know, you feel like there's these big players in this game. And then some of the big players actually enter the stage of the movie and throw their weight around. And there's these big things. And then at the end, it's like, no, they're all little guys. They're all little guys in the face of this machine that is American capitalism. That is this industrial complex of greed you know? And I thought that worked. I thought it worked entirely because it was a last minute wallop. You know, it's like, oh, you thought that all of these people had power, or they even thought that they were playing in an arena that they understand. Mm-hmm. And they weren't. They were never in a position to win. They just couldn't. And I think that in and of itself, like, is the theme that resonated with me.
Yeah, great. Well said, Jeff. I think another thing, though, that you bring up that I wanted to mention is this is one movie, it's very rare, where the MacGuffin becomes the theme of the, like, is a crucial right. part of the theme.
It's actually important.
The whole, the whole time I'm like, it's just a MacGuffin. It's not important. Like, we don't actually need to give a shit what actually it is. And then it turns out to be theoretically central to what they're trying to say with the movie.
Right.
So I thought that was interesting.
And that's cool. I think that's a hard thing to pull off.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like, I hope Soderbergh kind of keeps going with this. Like, who killed the electric car, right? Give us the dramatic gangster retelling of that whole story.
Just make everything into crime thrillers. Climate change. And, you know, like, he's got to do a climate change one next and all this other stuff. So, all right. Those are our thoughts on No Sudden Move. Mixed bag on the podcast, but I think overall we liked it. No one thought it was bad. So,
I want to like it more. I think that's my main takeaway. But yeah.
Stay tuned to hear what we'll be discussing next week on the podcast. In the meantime, find more episodes of this podcast at slashfilmcast.com. Email us at slashfilmcast@gmail.com. Our theme song comes from Adam Warrock. Check out his music at Bandcamp. Our spoiler bumper comes from Kyle Corwith. This episode was edited by me, David Chen. And I do want to mention, by the way, that at the end of the day, it's still pretty impressive that Steven Soderbergh made a movie. Use the hashtag /tag if you want to recommend films and TV shows for us. And check out patreon.com/filmpodcast if you want to support us monetarily. Of course, never support us if it is in any way a financial hardship. You can always go to Apple Podcasts and leave a review for us. That does help a lot. We'd really appreciate it if you could do that. Our After Dark this week at patreon.com/filmpodcast is going to be a discussion of The Limey and some other stuff that you will hear if you are a subscriber, again, at patreon.com/filmpodcast. And next week, we're going to be talking about Black Widow, newest film on Disney Plus Premier Access. It'll also be out in theaters. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. Weekly plugs a part of the show each week where we plug something we've made or
that's a new thing. That's a new thing that Zencaster plays it on infinite, and I don't know how to turn it off either, Dave. Happens to me all the time on DLC.
Boy. Great. This is great.
Yep. The rest of the show now.
You have to click it. You have to click it to stop it from playing.
We have to keep going. Just let it keep playing.
Yeah. Just constant through the rest of the show. That's what we're gonna hear now over and over.
Amazing. Underneath. Amazing.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.